Okay, next case for argument is Hill versus Potter. Mr. Stuhl.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, my name is Lee Stuhl. I represent the appellant, Robert Hill. The case, as you all are aware, has a long history that's involved not only this court, the lower court here in Chicago, but Washington, D.C.'s district court and the Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. The appeal concerns decisions of Thomas Penfield Jackson, a Washington, D.C. district court judge, Judge Bucklow here in Chicago, and Judge Dara, who treated retaliation claims that remained after.
So your notion is that Judge Jackson's decision, that's sort of like an interlocutory ruling in a case that actually was decided by Judge Dara, is that the theory? We don't usually review judgments from other districts,
well,
other circuits.
And this was
so is that your idea, that he makes a sort of interim ruling and...
That's right, and that once Judge Dara dismissed the remaining portions of the complaint, that it became ripe for review in this circuit, rather than pursuing appeals in different circuits. For instance, the Dara or Bucklow dismissal here, and then going to Washington, D.C.'s circuit court to have Thomas Penfield Jackson's dismissal treated. So my understanding was, and I believe that in the opinion that came out of the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, they treated the issue of what the appellant here might confront should, given the various dismissals from the different courts, where he would, is he looking at one particular forum, or is he going to be having to pursue piecemeal appeals around the country? So that, I suppose to answer your question, that is my understanding, is that these appeals, including the Jackson dismissal, is properly before this court.
And I'm trying to figure out what your argument is. So your argument is Judge Bucklow dismissed your first case for without prejudice for failure to exhaust administrative remedies. So is it your idea that she was giving you an opportunity to go back and exhaust those remedies and then renew your suit? Is that your argument?
Well, she issued her decision dismissing those particular claims, that count of the complaint that dealt with the second-tier EAS position, on the basis that the plaintiff, that Mr. Hill, had failed to cooperate with the agency. She dismissed them without prejudice in her decision, and as I've explained in an affidavit that accompanied the brief, we had a pretrial conference on the remaining retaliation claims and discussed her decision at the time of that pretrial conference. The pretrial conference occurred on the same day of the dismissal order relative to this failure to cooperate dismissal. And we discussed how to proceed, and my understanding was that the Postal Service would agree to investigate them or to process them in the way that they claimed that they were deprived previously, and that they would be renewed along with the retaliation claims that she was prepared to go to trial on would be dismissed without prejudice, so that this whatever investigation needed to be done could occur, and then both would be brought in a renewed action for treatment in a single trial rather than several trials. We discussed this at the pretrial conference. I'm the one who I asked, what does this order mean, this failure to exhaust finding? This was a conference that followed 2 years of litigation, hours of deposing my client, depositions in different states. The finding was that the Postal Service couldn't understand at some point what his claims concerned. So my understanding, based on our conversation, and I filed an emergency motion reciting, in some respects, what occurred at the conference and on my agreement with Postal Service Counsel about the renewed investigation. That is, to answer your question, what we contemplated at the time. I mean, we are challenging the propriety of a dismissal of those particular claims on the basis of failure to cooperate on a number of grounds. But first, the regulation that is very clear provides that once 180 days passes following the filing of a formal complaint, then absence of final agency decision or appeal on that claim, the complainant has the right to file in federal court. And
I don't see how you can challenge Judge Bucklow's decision without having appealed it.
Well, we didn't believe that there was a final decision. We understood that at the time that order was entered, dismissing that claim and the retaliation claim on my emergency motion.
Well, then why didn't you go back to her?
Because the reason we filed in Washington, D.C. is because the U.S. Attorney, the Assistant U.S. Attorney defending the Postal Service.
But I don't see how you can have it both ways. I mean, either you had a final appealable decision from Judge Bucklow, which event you wanted to challenge if you had to appeal, or you didn't. And if you didn't, the case is still going on, and you go back to her after you exhausted your remedies. But you're claiming a right to bring a second fresh lawsuit and use the appeal from the judgment of that lawsuit to attack an earlier lawsuit, decision in an earlier lawsuit.
We'd anticipated
the propriety of that.
Well, we anticipated renewing the action, both the retaliation claims and the EAS-related claims that were dismissed for failure to cooperate. We chose Washington, D.C. to do it, not to avoid Judge Bucklow, but because on the summary judgment motion that she confronted and ruled on dismissing the case, the government had included a request that the case be transferred, a venue for the case be transferred, because venue was improper in Chicago. And it was, because the Postal Service headquarters there is a specific venue provision for Title VII cases, and despite the plaintiff's residence here and his work here, the venue provision required.
When did the Postal Service raise the venue?
Along with its motion for summary judgment on the
Wasn't that too late?
Pardon?
Wasn't that too late?
Well, I argued that...
Supposed to object to venue right at the outset.
I think we did argue that it was late, but what we wanted to avoid was renewing the case with Judge Bucklow. She, at the pretrial conference, said, I didn't reach this venue question because I'm dismissing these claims on these bases. To renew it before her and then have the case transferred to Washington, D.C. was something that seemed to us didn't make sense. But we also...
Why did it seem to you to make sense? Improper venue. I mean, that's ridiculous. Obviously, the Postal Service can litigate in Chicago. I don't understand it. It's really...
Well...
This is not the way to run a procedural system. Absolutely no reason to go to Washington.
Despite the clear venue statute?
Venue is waivable. The objections to venue are waivable. They're supposed to be brought up at the outset. If you said 2 years, 2 years into the suit, they first discover a venue problem?
No, they filed their motion about 6 months or something.
Oh, 6 months, yeah.
7 months into the case.
Right. Well, that's too late.
Well, that's the reason we filed in Washington, D.C. But the basis for, I mean, the argument is that there's a finding that the appellant failed to cooperate with the investigation. May I reserve my time for...
Yes, sure. Thank you, Mr. Donatelli.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, counsel. Your Honors, this case presents itself, substantively it's easy, but as we've already discussed, it's a procedural mess, all because counsel's trying to bring in the whole Bucklow decision.
Oh, all because you switched the case to Washington. It's really pointless.
The government didn't switch the case. What happened was it got dismissed from Judge Bucklow. Plaintiff went back to see if he could exhaust.
That was denied, and then he filed a new lawsuit in D.C.
I thought he said Judge Bucklow had transferred the case.
No, the only transfer was when Judge Jackson transferred it back here.
Okay.
Because he had gotten rid of the claims that were supposedly the basis of the Washington, D.C. venue. And all that was left was the retaliation that occurred here in Chicago. In any event, when you get down to the nitty-gritty, Judge Dara got it all right, and it's not as complicated as it may look in those briefs. What Judge Dara said is, any of the claims that were in front of...
Any litigation pending in North Carolina?
Is there any? Is that the question?
Yes.
Oh, not that I'm aware of.
This is at least the end.
I'm hoping so. This is the fifth venue.
Hmm.
He said anything that had been in front of Judge Bucklow is barred and precluded. That was a whole other lawsuit. He didn't have the record in that case, just like this court does not have it. And so then that left some retaliation claims, which are plaintiff felt he was demoted, and then there was a transfer. He said as to the demotion claims, those were not exhausted, and that's a persistent problem in plaintiff's case. And as to the transfer claims, he looked at it and said, plaintiff has not shown pretext as to the government's explanation. There are, when you see the briefs, there are numerous ways on which this court can affirm what happened in front of Judge Dara because there's so many alternatives. One of the important alternatives is, although plaintiff is trying to get Judge Bucklow's determination in front of this court, he does not attack Judge Dara's determination, which gave res judicata effect to Judge Bucklow's determination. So he hasn't even attacked that one. Also, Judge Dara said that there was problems both with your prima facie case as well as the pretext. So there are ample bases on which this court can affirm, and for these reasons, the government asks that you do so. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Donatelli. Mr. Stuhl, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
I'd just like to make a point on the failure to exhaust issue. Based upon Judge Jackson's rationale and Judge Bucklow's rationale, there is, if a statute is plain and says that a complainant has the right to file in federal court within 180 days following the filing of a complaint, it's meaningless. I think that provision is rendered meaningless under the Jackson Bucklow rationale. If an agency, for instance, can come in on the 180th day and say, well, we want to conduct an investigation, it's unclear to me. I mean, reading those decisions, it means they have to wait another 180 days or until someone determines that they've cooperated with the investigation. And I think it raises a real question about what must a complainant who often isn't represented, they often are not, what are they to do? I'm out of time.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel.